One of the incredible things about particularly the investors that we've brought around the table is they share my passion for this double bottom line of course, we're tracking in terms of financial return on investment, but also we are very actively thinking about all the different ways that we might measure our social return on investment. And we think about that in terms of three categories. Part of that is academic key performance indicators and the impact that improving student mental health can have, not only on their grades and graduation rates, but attendance, actually getting kids to school.
Welcome to How Women Inspire, where women lead, invest, and give. I'm your host, Julie Castro-Abrams, founder and CEO of How Women Lead, and managing partner of the venture firm How Women Invest. Feminist, social justice warrior, mother, friend of 50,000 plus badass women, and an expert at helping top executive women get on boards and break down barriers for women entrepreneurs, investors, and social impact activists. In this podcast, we interview women influencers and leaders from across the globe who are in the C-suite, founding companies, investing, and agents of change. We'll share stories of how women lead. We'll provide insights and data, tips you can put into action, and get to know the women who have fiercely and unabashedly stepped into their power in leadership and opened doors for other women like you. We discuss topics ranging from the journey of getting a board seat, how we can counter cultural frameworks that change the way the world views women leaders, what we're doing to close the gender funding gap, and driving equity for women in all aspects of life and career. My goal is that after every episode, you walk away feeling inspired, unstoppable, ready to level up and step into your power and influence. I want to break down the cultural narratives that hold us back collectively and those messy messages you heard that are taking up way too much of your brain space. I want you to know you're invited in because I know that together we can change the culture, change opportunities, and create the future we want for our daughters and sisters and friends. This is our time. Are you in? Welcome to How Women Inspire. Our guest today is Kenzie Butera Davis. She's the CEO and founder of Maro. This is going to touch your hearts, my friend. This is a digital health company that has been awarded the leading innovative early stage pediatric health company by Oracle Cerner and the world's most innovative ed tech startup by ASU GSV for their work at the intersection of healthcare and education. Maro's mission is to eliminate the 11-year gap between the first symptom and the first intervention when it comes to youth mental health. Just imagine that. It takes 11 years of pain for children and their families and their teachers and everybody involved in their system to actually get a diagnosis and be able to help children. Their digital medical neighborhood operates across home, school, and clinics to support early intervention and risk detection, starting with school-based mental health screening and interventions that are triggered. I am so honored that you're here today, Kenzie. I'm honored that we have invested in your company. You are exactly the kind of woman leader we all dream about, that values-based leader who sees problems and comes up with solutions that are frankly uniquely related to you being a woman. So I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. And you know, I'm so proud to be a How Women Invest portfolio company founder.
Good. That makes me very happy. Okay. Before we dive in, this is some of it's serious business. And it is. This is very serious. And I like to have a little bit of fun. And you are a fun person. So let's start with music. What is that, you know, your favorite theme song, that thing that you listen to on the tough days or the good days?
I just did my Spotify Wrapped. Mm-hmm. And the number one song that I listened to in 2023 is called Gasoline by Nick D. it's a really fun song that you can't help but dance to. I think the song is actually, well, it's about this girl, but then it's also mostly about dancing. So it's great. And that's my pump up song right now.
Awesome. Yeah. We have a Spotify playlist, everyone, for our How Women Lead and How Women Invest podcast, folks. So you can get your inspiration from Kenzie and all of our other guests. So I would love to hear from you. You've had so much success, but have you had challenging or proud moments that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, I can share both challenging and proud moments. Well, I'll actually start with something that I'm really proud of, which is there's a couple of different moments that really stand out to me in terms of moments that made me really feel like all the lack of sleep and all the things that we've run into along the way that have been hurdles were really worth it. So there's two that really come to mind. The first is the very first unsolicited bit of user feedback that we got, not in the sense of product feedback, but in the sense of a story of how someone really used our product. It was someone that I didn't know. I only heard about this because they happened to know a friend of a friend who knew me, and it sort of just got passed down the pipeline. And it was a long time ago, we just had the Morrow for Families mobile app, and all we had in the app was content. We had spent a lot of time building these Duolingo style modules that would help educate parents on how to talk with their kids about all sorts of different mental health topics. And we had this one parent who used the platform, specifically our module on anxiety. As she was reading the content, she realized that she felt her child might have an anxiety disorder, something that was more beyond just your day-to-day stressors, but she actually might have generalized anxiety disorder. And so after reading our module, she sought out a therapist for her child. They did end up getting a diagnosis, and she kept revisiting our app to engage with our content and work on coping skills with her daughter. And so that was like just such a proud moment. And then there's one more, which is we launched our Morrow for Schools platform is largely as a result of your investment. And the first time we ever screened our very first students was such a proud moment. And it was particularly proud because our first school ever had a really high immigrant population. And we've received a lot of concerns, a lot of questions, very fair, about how are you going to ensure that kids who English is not their first language are getting to see the right therapist. And we were able to prove that we really can do that in our very first screening ever, and just kind of showed the value of having a tech platform that can digitize and automate a lot of things, but that we were still able to maintain a really deep personal relationship with the counseling team and make sure that we were always meeting their and their students' needs. Yeah. Those are two proud moments. And oh, I can get challenges.
That's beautiful. I could just imagine being in that parent's place and what it meant to them. So thank you very much. Well, thanks for everything you do, but that's a beautiful story. How did you even come up with Morrow? What was your inspiration? And what is it? What does the name Morrow mean?
So the name Morrow has a really interesting background. I have a friend who's total lit nerd, and he also works in marketing. And so I was going back and forth because I couldn't figure out what to name the company. I had originally named the company Before We Begin, which was from when I worked on a rape crisis hotline. We would always get on the call and we would start by saying, before we begin, I want you to know that this is a safe space and anything you say to me will remain confidential. And then we would get them to services. And I always loved what those first three words meant. They were teeing you up to create a safe space to deal with a really challenging conversation. But it's too long and not catchy of a name. So I went back and forth, and eventually we landed on Morrow, which is Virgil, the Roman poet's last name. And he appears as a guide to Dante throughout the trilogy of the Inferno and in Purgatorio, and sort of releases him into Paradiso. And the analogy there is that Morrow is a guide for the hardest parts of growing up.
Beautiful. I love that. So did you have a personal experience with childhood mental illness, or what inspired you?
The reason that I started Morrow was largely as a result of personal experience. So I'll start actually a little closer to now and then delve into the real reason behind starting it. But I had spent about 4 years writing a thesis on the implementation of health education in the US. At the time, I was really focused on sex education because I saw consent education as a way to decrease rates of rape and sexual assault proactively. Unfortunately, that is an issue that has deeply impacted me and many of the women in my family. And so I got really obsessed with this concept of education as a form of preventative health. And then I had a family member who was much younger in high school, and this was really during the early part of COVID, who was in and out of the suicide ward because of suicide attempts. And so I took the learnings from this dissertation and sort of what I was seeing in real time happen with not only my family member, but also so many young kids, as we know, where there's just a lot of nuances around the mental health crisis. And I was seeing not only what led up to her having a suicide attempt and ending up in the hospital, but also how difficult reintegration into school was. And so that really inspired me to take the learnings from the dissertation, but apply them to mental health versus sex education.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I just want to take a minute and say, anyone listening here for whom this is a shared personal experience, I'm sorry that you've had to go through. And I hope that you, like Kenzie, have found resources or even have been able to take action that really matters. Do you have a philosophy on impact for Mara?
We do. So one of the incredible things about particularly the investors that we've brought around the table is they share my passion for this double bottom line of course, we're tracking in terms of financial return on investment, but also we are very actively thinking about all the different ways that we might measure our social return on investment. And we think about that in terms of three categories. Part of that is academic key performance indicators and the impact that improving student mental health can have not only on their grades and graduation rates, but attendance, actually getting kids to school, which is a huge problem. The second being health and well-being. So we always talk about our mission is to eliminate what is currently an 8 to 11 year gap between first symptom and first intervention. And the only way to track whether or not we're trending toward actually achieving that mission is our kids, not only how many kids are we screening, but how many are we referring to care? Are they staying in care? And can we get feedback from the provider that that treatment has been quote unquote effective? They're actually seeing symptom reduction. Have we potentially saved them healthcare cost down the road? And then the third area of impact that we look at is business impact on the folks who we partner with or sell to. So that would be health plans. Are we driving down the cost of care? That would be providers. Are we reducing the burden on providers of the sheer number of kids that are ending up in the emergency department in behavioral health beds? So I would say that's largely our philosophy on impact.
I'd love to hear a little bit from that data, from what you're seeing. You're doing the screenings at school, right? So what are you seeing? And do you think it matters that you're doing it at school as opposed to something being independent or something that you would do at home?
Oh my gosh, it matters so much. It does, because that's where kids are. Kids are at school. And that's why we decided to do screening at school. Also, schools screen for all sorts of stuff. They screen for eye health.
It's normalized. So it's like, it's all part of the, testing.
It's super normalized. What's not normalized is the mental health component. And that's what we're trying to drive. But I definitely think it matters because you got to think about all those kids who are flying under the radar. You know, there's so many.
What percentage are you seeing? Like of the kids that wouldn't have been identified before, nobody even knew this is something to be concerned about. What are the numbers looking like?
So we're still calibrating toward exactly what that metric is, because it's such a range of kids who we could catch someone that the counselors were unaware of, but they still have maybe moderate symptoms and they may work with them at the school level versus referring them out to a therapist or provider and sort of looping, which is when we really loop the family in, of course. So it's hard to put an exact number on it just yet. What I can say is I'll give an example of one of our most recent screenings. Last week, we screened 105 kids and we had 17% of those kids who were flagged as potentially suicidal. And
oh my God, Kinsey.
Yes, it's unbelievably heavy. Actually, believe it or not, that number is below the national average slightly, which you forget when you're seeing the actual flags in the database and you start to see that information go off. And so in this case, that particular counselor is still working to log all of the follow-up actions. So I'll have more data in terms of how many kids were already in care and how many were not and had to be referred out. But what I think is a really interesting qualitative point is that that counselor had a lot of families reach out during the consent collection period and say, hey, I just want you to know that when you screen my child, they are going to be flagged. And we're aware of this and we're working with a therapist. And then there are a lot of cases, as I mentioned, where we actually heard from this particular counselor that she was not expecting to have 17% of kids flagged, even with those parent warnings. But I don't know the exact percentage just yet.
The complexity, even for the school, the teacher, classroom teacher, to have almost 20% of the kids, like that's extraordinary. Are you seeing a difference between different demographic groups, geographies? We all have beliefs that certain types of communities are going to have better results, but interesting to know.
We haven't seen any trends like that just yet. It's really been such a broad range of demographics and kids who.
It doesn't matter if you're in California or New York or New Orleans. It doesn't matter your social economic status necessarily. It's all. Yeah. Sure.
I mean, I will say in terms of the types of things that kids are struggling with, those are different. Like, for example, some schools we may see substance use disorders are what the teachers are most concerned about. Whereas in others, you've got, like, especially in our private charter schools, you have a lot of kids who are only able to stay in school if their grades stay in a certain threshold. Yeah. So you see a lot more high anxiety, perfectionism among those kids. And we would like to start screening soon for eating disorders because that's often comorbid with high anxiety and perfectionism.
Yep.
So those are some categories that we see split depending on the nature of the school, but otherwise everything is pretty evenly distributed with our current data.
And you, at this point, you feel like, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm grilling you. Are there enough providers? I know that there's been a crisis in mental health care providers since COVID. Yes. We all hear about it, right?
I'm really glad that you brought that up. So there is a shortage of licensed mental health providers, but that's not the full story. Part of the problem is there is a real issue with democratizing access to mental health care resources. And even though there is technically a supply demand shortage, a lot of our virtual care partners have really high customer acquisition costs. I mean, we saw this even with Talkspace's public numbers last year, year before, really high CAC despite the supply demand. And so part of our value altruistically to the industry overall is we don't have preferred providers. We build a database of folks that we've vetted in the virtual care space. And we have our schools provide community partners that they trust and refer to in that same referral database.
Right.
So then you're really just filtering by insurance, lack of insurance, Medicaid, language a child speaks, and producing a list of matched providers that are high quality for that child and referring out.
I'm so glad that you're doing this. It's just kind of amazing to think that this gap hadn't been fixed before. It's stunning. And it took you. So it sounds like it was birthed out of a very painful experience, but you've turned this into something that's a gift for the world. So thank you so much for your leadership.
So beautiful. We have so many kids to reach, which I'm really excited about.
Okay, what's the future for Mara? What do you see happening into the future?
So our goal in the next 2 years is to screen 1 million kids and, of course, engage their families. We think families are a huge part of the equation. It's why we started with them. It's why consent was one of the first things that we focused on building when it came to screening. But that's our goal, to screen 1 million kids, because I think once you start to hit some of those larger thresholds of screening, you think about the partners that we're referring to, some of them have 9 to 12 week therapy programs that are between 76 and 90% effective at reducing symptoms of anxiety and depression. Now, not every case, but some of these kids can develop coping skills, and you can start to see significant reduction in depression and anxiety in a very short period of time, as long as you identify it. So I'm really excited about what that number means for us in terms of the kids that will then start building skills that are really targeted around what they're dealing with that otherwise probably would not have had those resources.
I'm just a million kids, 20% of whom's lives could be completely transformed. So thank you. So what can people listening to do today to this podcast do if they have a school that they know that this should be in? What could people that are listening help you with?
We really welcome, being an early stage company, we're always especially grateful for introductions to schools. We thrive in middle and high school environments because our current screeners are validated for kids ages 12 and up, although we're adding some new features to come to the platform to allow us to work with younger kids. So we really welcome introductions. We work mostly with directors of student services, a head of counseling, someone who's really involved in student health and wellness at the school. And the way to make that intro would be, the best way is email us at hello@meetmorrow.com. But also you can go to our website, www.meetmorrow.com, and there is a form on there that you can fill out.
Excellent. All right, everyone, for all the young people in your life, and to save us all the sort of pain and impact of people not getting help early enough, let's all make referrals tomorrow and tell everybody that this is a critical thing to do. I just can't tell you how honored I am to be supporting you in your journey. You're exactly the kind of leader we all want to see. So thank you so much.
All
right. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.
And with that, I want to thank you all for listening to today's episode of How Women Inspire. And because your inspiration should not stop when this podcast ends, head over to our website, howwomenlead.com. Follow us on LinkedIn at How Women Lead and subscribe or follow on your favorite podcast app to find out how you can proactively take charge and step into your power through our workshops and activism. In our loving network, we want to propel you. See you next time, ladies. And remember to be unabashedly visible.